Common Core. For example, I just did an article on the schools in Wellingham, Washington, where their full-day kindergarten is being conducted under a Common Core curriculum. And if you read it, if you read the article about what they are teaching, you will see that it's not high literacy. You know, you can't solve the problems of education. You can't get the poor out of poverty unless you aim for high literacy. And none of these programs aim for high literacy. They aim for a low-level type of proletariat literacy, which uses the right brain to perform the functions of the left brain, which, of course, creates brain impairment. But these teachers just, you know, keep doing what they're doing. They've been told by their professors of education that it's the way to go. So I hope that my book will wake up a lot of people, and particularly the candidates that are going to be running for the presidential spot in 2016, which brings me to our president, who is betraying Israel in a way that's unprecedented. This man is really throwing Israel under the bus because he's determined to form a partnership with Iran. And I don't think that the Iranians want a partnership with the great Satan. I mean, theologically, it just doesn't work for them. You know, it may work for Obama to make an alliance with the world's greatest producer of terror. I think the mullahs are going to resist. And yet, you can see that the Arab states in the Gulf have assumed that Obama has already betrayed them. He's not going to help them. And so they are going to form their own military forces to take back Yemen and probably stop Iraq from being taken over by Iran. So it's really an incredible mess that Obama has gotten us into, you know, and I just wonder how long this is going on before some generals from the Pentagon march up to the White House and arrest this man for treason. You know, something has to be done to stop him. Don't you think?
Well, Sam, you know, it looks like even growing numbers of liberals are waking up to this. It's, you know, it's really been a despicable process where it's almost like Obama and Kerry are there begging on their hands and knees for Iran to give them some kind of a piece of paper so that they could get off the airplane and wave it in the wind while everyone stands under their umbrellas like they did with the very liberal British Prime Minister Chamberlain, who tilted toward the Nazi side versus the communist side in 1938. And I think it is very much comparable to that sort of situation. Much of the Arab world now is more pro-America, if you will, than our American government. You know, the Saudis, of course, the state of Israel, but we're talking about, you know, the Saudis, Egypt, Jordan. These countries are also outraged over the idea of Iran being handed over a nuclear bomb. And, you know, the idea that this is not what's going on is absurd. So I wonder what really is going on here. Why exactly is our government trying to give a green light so Iran can have a nuclear bomb? Why do we want them to have that?
Well, that's because Obama wants it. Obama is a traitor. And he's acting like a traitor, and that's what a traitor would do. A traitor would do the opposite of what an American president should do, and that is bomb the hell out of these nuclear sites in Iran. I mean, you know, John Bolton wrote an article for the Wall Street Journal, the Journal or the Times, I forget which one, in which he said the only solution is to bomb the Iranian nuclear sites. That's the only solution. And, of course, that's Obama has gone away from the military solution, slowly but surely. And he's just a pure, unadulterated traitor and is getting away with it because Americans do not know how to deal with a traitor in the White House. When I mentioned, I attended a small Republican meeting the other night, and I mentioned that generals should, from the Pentagon, ought to go to the White House and arrest them. And this one gentleman said, well, that's not the American way. Well, what is the American way? We've never been in this situation before. Not only that, but I've read somewhere that another 10,000 kids are coming in from Central America. I mean,
almost daily, yeah.
Yes, I mean,
they're going across the border, thousands a day.
I mean, what more does this man have to do before we stop him?
Of what this is about.
Now, I assume that you're going to be going to the synagogue or the temple on Passover, right?
Yes, sure.
I hope you will ask some of the congregants their views on this whole thing, particularly his betrayal of Israel and what their response is. I'd be very curious to know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hold out much hope that that their loyalties are with anything other than Obama overall, you know, the great and glorious leader. And it's really a bizarre, yeah, it's a bizarre disconnect is really the only way to describe it.
Well, it's very disappointing.
I don't really... It is. It's ugly. It's there's no rational out for it, for sure. But, yeah, I mean, that's what's going on.
That's right. And, you know, but, of course, this idea of a partnership with Iran, I mean, that's so totally impossible. I mean, how can you have a partnership with a nation that preaches genocide against Israel? You know, they haven't given up on that. I mean, just recently they were all, you know, all talking about death to America, death to Israel. And their leadership hasn't given up on it. I don't know. They must be totally confused by what Obama's trying to do. Because,
Interesting. I mean, it's very, I mean, it's really quite novel. Actually, and
that's the problem. That's the problems that the secularists have. Since they believe in evolution, they don't believe in God. They don't believe in the Ten Commandments, and of course, morality, Western morality, begins with the Ten Commandments. I mean, in which Moses outlined what thou shalt and thou shalt not. I mean, and it's as clear as ever,
Sam.
And that's why the Ten Commandments are as pertinent today and should be posted in every public school in America as ever. You know, it says, "Thou shalt not steal," and that's one of the problems you have with public school is that they're into, whether you do in a department store there's so much theft going on. I mean, the department stores lose billions of dollars a year with people stealing things in the stores. But if they post the "Thou shalt not steal," that might have an effect, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But his thing is, it's hard to explain it. But basically, it's more than just the Ten Commandments. The Torah, which is what we look to in the West, it lays out the basis of limited government. It lays out the basis of private ownership of property. I mean, the first recorded purchase of property was that when Abraham bought the cave of Machpelah for his, to bury his wife. It's still there.
Right.
You know, this is, it's Jethro in Sinai taught Moses how to govern by creating limited government, a council of elders, a separate judiciary. You know, it set up a means by which slavery could be abolished. You know, they love to say, oh, well, the Bible had slaves. Yeah, but yeah, if it wasn't for the Bible, there would be slavery today. I mean, the whole idea that an individual can enslave another, that's a biblical concept. It's the Bible basically set the stage by which slaves, because that's what was going on at the time, there would be rules about how slaves were to be treated. They were to be given rights. In a sense, it was the world's first labor laws. That's all in the Bible.
Exactly, and that's
for
what...
To think that...
You know, the Bible is the foundation of our governmental system. I mean, it was the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were written by men who knew the Bible very well. And they didn't deviate from it. I mean, so the whole concept of individual freedom and rights coming down from God and not from the government, that's directly out of the Bible.
And, of course, that's
what makes our government so unique, is because for the first time in history, individuals were given freedom by God, not by their government. And the government was said to be the securer of those rights and those freedoms. The purpose of government is to secure the unalienable rights of the citizens. This was totally new, because prior to that, everybody assumed that your rights came from the king or the emperor or God knows whatever, form. And that's why this country is so different, because it provided human beings the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And there's so much included in that pursuit of happiness. You can't pursue happiness unless you have the freedom to do so. And that is why Obama wants to throttle the individual. He and John Dewey were collectivists. They don't believe in individualism. They've done everything in their power to destroy individualism, destroyed so much of American education, because they're telling children that they are no better than their cats or dogs, no better than their pets, and there is no purpose to life except to enjoy its pleasures, you know. And the result is that you have more depression among young people today than we've ever had in the history of this country. People need to feel that people have to know that they have a purpose in life. They're here for a reason. That God put them here for a reason. And that God himself has a reason for creating this universe. And of course, all of that is missing from evolution. And so they have to also invent the source of morality. Because if the Bible is wrong and is a bunch of mythology, then they have to find a rational source of morality. But of course, this country's morality is based on the Bible, on the King James Version. There's no doubt about it. And also the Geneva Version, which the Pilgrims and the Puritans brought over with them. I mean, they were able to create a civilization in the wilderness because they had a model for morality, a model for a civilized society. They didn't come here with a blank, and started creating a civilization out of nothing. I mean, the Bible was there a blueprint for creating a civilization here in the wilderness? And But, you know, the evolutionists, the secularists, will keep trying to convince us that there is no God, there is no divine morality, there is no purpose to life, and, of course, that's total and complete nonsense.
You know, I mentioned to him that the only morality that comes out of the theory of evolution, and that is assuming that that theory is actually scientific.
You know, something that you just said reminded me of something important that has just flown out of my head. Yes, okay. In the Haggadah, women for years began elevating Miriam, because we don't open the door for Miriam, only for Eliyahu, who has yet to come. And as I studied more and more the Torah, I realized, well, Moshe's not mentioned either. I mean, the point being that it was God that got us out. But they certainly set quite a role model and an example in terms of what
Absolutely.
Holiest, as well as the highest level, can do to go up against real dictatorial power.
Yeah, you bet. I mean, that's what the whole story is about. Liberating oneself from this super government nanny state, if you will, and breaking out into a modality of freedom that took a full generation before one could.
Exactly. You know, I wonder where is Egypt now for Jews who are being punished, because finally we have a homeland that's sovereign, and it was hoped that once there would be Israel, that there would be no more anti-Semitism, but this was wrong. It was illusory. It was only a brief honeymoon period. And so now Jews around the world, in France, I'm thinking, and all over Europe, actually, and I'm told in South America from a recent conference there, are being attacked, some say by radicalized political Islamists, or by that together with left European-centric leftist Jew hatred, or a left that's been Palestinianized. And my question then for us is, when do Jews know they have to leave? And or at this moment, do Jews have to stay where they are and fight?
Well, I mean, that's the key question. Okay, my guest is Phyllis Chesler. She's the author of The New Anti-Semitism. Phyllis, of course we expect, you know, anti-Semitism from the hard right, which I don't think is a major factor today. We certainly also expect it from the Islamists, and as you point out. But the question that I have is, what is the deal with the left? I mean, many good, well-meaning people. I mean, last summer with the Hamas war, a colleague of mine, a talk radio colleague, that being Tom Hartman, he was going on a show about, you know, the missiles coming out of Gaza as being firecrackers, he called them, and that Gaza's a prison camp, and that Israel is this aggressor. And this is a well-meaning liberal. And then I went to a Hamas rally here in Boston, where I live, with my daughter, and we observed that there were two general types of people there. On the one side, you had Arabs, or people who appeared to be Arabs, and they were generally more quiet and respectful. And then you had these white, liberal, left-wing people who were there screaming with their ashen faces and their fists in the air. And you know, I'm wondering, what skin do they have in the game here? You know, they're neither Jewish nor are they Arab, although some of them probably are Jewish.
We're looking at a perfect storm at this moment in history. On the one hand, there is, as you said, traditional Islamic Jew hatred, and there is also traditional Jew hatred among right-wingers, which is not our problem today, right now.
Right. Exactly.
But what is new, partly, and what creates the perfect storm, is the alliance that the progressive so-called good people, the left liberals, including many Jewish left liberals, who have decided that Israel is the worst country on earth, that the Palestinians, ruled by corrupt, misogynist tyrants, who are terrorists, I'm thinking of Hamas, and I'm thinking of the Palestinian Authority, that they are the poster children for the victim, Oba'alis, with whom the left romanticizes and identifies with, doesn't care. When Muslim on Muslim violence breaks out, which is the story in the meltdown of the Middle East right now, it's a Sunni-Shia religious civil war, in addition to the anti-infidel war, they have been Palestinianized through hugely well-funded and massive disinformation campaigns, so that they've been Palestinianized and Stalinized. So what once was genuine liberal or, let's say, well-meaning socialism has now become hard-bitten and viscerally, like a virus has been unleashed of hatred against Zionism, which is wrongfully, very Orwellian style, wrongfully identified as the Nazi apartheid colonial state. And the leftists are amazing. They're making common cause not just with barbarians, but with barbarians who specifically will kill them first. And who do not honor their values of human rights. They're making, so the left liberals in the West, making common cause with the most intolerant and the most dangerous, it's almost a suicide leap that they're engaged in the name of anti-racism. And what they cannot admit, just as many leftists in America couldn't admit Stalin's crimes and the nature and extent of them, they seem not to want to know that Islam has a history of colonialism and imperialism, slavery, apartheid, conversion by the sword, that is continues to this moment. So if there would be fairness or balance or accuracy in reportage, then you would have, yes, America had oil interests. Yes, America, for that reason, made deals with tyrants who sat atop oil fields in the Middle East. But Islam did worse. So what are we going to do? Are we going to say the country, America, that abolished slavery is the worst country on earth, and that the country that practices it, Sudan, for example, we're not going to hold them accountable? If so, that's very soft core racism, having much lower standards for people of color
And I would argue that the left, at least the left-leaning and the far left, their opposition to things like racism and whatnot, those are situational. I mean, they're the ones who embraced the communism of not only Stalin, but more recently Mao Zedong, the boat people, you know, Pol Pot. You didn't hear much complaining about that when they slaughtered millions of people. So it has nothing to do with any actual belief in human rights.
But what they say when challenged is, these were the wrong people, and they didn't put the right idea into practice in the right way.
They weren't pure communist enough. That's like saying that Hitler wasn't pure Nazi enough. It's a very bizarre outlook. But then we have, given the fact that the left obviously doesn't care about human rights, otherwise they'd be talking about the 30,000 Syrians that have been driven out of the country. They are focusing on the state of Israel. Thank you very much. They're focusing on the state of Israel, which has a very good record of military engagement, better than the United States, actually. I mean, when it comes to dealing with war situations. So why is it that they are doing this? And I would argue that it has to do with two things. Firstly, they don't like Israel because Israel is capitalist. Israel represents the free market. They're the startup nation. You've got creativity. You've got capital development. It's a threat to the whole Middle East in their authoritarian, oligarchic, putrid economies. And it's a threat to the communist ideal. And secondly, because Israel is Jewish, they despise religion and they view Judaism as the font of belief in a creator of the universe, belief in a set of moral and ethical principles that transcend human manipulation, which is what they're into, and that they believe that that has to be destroyed. I mean, this goes back to Karl Marx's infamous pamphlet on the Jewish question, which was republished as A World Without Jews. You know, Marx wanted to get rid of Jews because they stood for, quote, huckstering and self-interest and they worship money and that kind of thing. I mean, these are things that stand in the way of their utopian ideology, this idea that creating a new kind of a man, an international beehive or whatever it is. And so they see Judaism as an obstacle, and Israel presents a double threat in that it is both Jewish and that it's capitalist, in that it embraces ideals of Judaism that set the stage for capitalism. So I think that's what this is about. It's nothing to do with Israel's human rights record, which is good.
I agree with what you said, but let's remember that there's a 60 to 70 year history in which the Arab League, Soviet Russia, the Saudi states, and left-wing philanthropists like Soros, and there are many more like him, who carefully, patiently funded institutes on Middle East studies, which are propaganda mills for Jew hatred, and devised curricula and brainwashed the entire Arab-speaking and Muslim world, larger than the Middle East. And at the same time, the Israeli government did nothing to combat this cognitive war, and American Jews did less than nothing. I know because I tried very hard, beginning in the 1970s and certainly by 1980. And colleagues of mine tried again in the 1990s, and there was simply an underestimation of the power of the battle of ideas. So the left point of view, which you're quite right, says that they're anti-racist, but in practice, Jew hatred is racism. And in the left, which says that it's the democracy, bypasses, as you pointed out, the only democracy that's stable and amazing and miraculous in the region that is barbaric. So I think when it's Jews who are leftists, we have another set of issues, because that's opportunism. It's not self-hatred. Or to be very fair, Rabbi Hillel asked three questions. If I'm not for myself, what am I? And many Zionists, both Christian and Jewish, answered that question. But Hillel also asked, if I'm only for myself, what am I? And the left liberals among the Jews are answering that question. We're for everybody else, but not for our own. We will be the first to criticize our own to prove that we're not in any danger and that we're repairing the world. And we unfortunately, or fortunately, have to answer, and then if not now, when, is Hillel's third question. We have to answer all three questions, and respectfully, I suggest that we cannot act on the answer to all three at the same moment in history. So at this moment, Israel specifically is in existential danger. Iran, with whom Obama is about to make an alliance, Obama is really a prince of anarchy, plus much worse. He's making an alliance with the very country that hates America, that will fool and trick America, and which has its nuclear gun sight set on Israel first. Israel is America's ally. Yeah. It makes no sense.
Of the anti-Semitism on the left. Now, you said two really extraordinary things here. Firstly, that George Soros, actually, with his Middle East studies and his propaganda, he actually has been he's fueled anti-Semitism in the Arab and Islamic world. You'd think it was the other way around. Now, as far as Jews not getting on board with this agenda, with this understanding that Israel faces an existential threat, and many of these people are actually not anti-Israel, but yet they don't seem to get it. I mean, I guess the question is, why is that?
Well, no, Israel, you see, is now the Jew of the world. People no longer are admitting that they hate Jews, Jews as a people or individual Jews, although they're killing them all over Europe. And they're attacking them viciously, verbally, on campuses in the West and in the media in the West and certainly in every human rights organization and at the United Nations, of course, which has done only one thing effectively in its life, which is legalized Jew hatred. Israel has become the Jew of the world, the whipping girl, the pariah, nation state.